TSN aired a very good, a fantastic, actually, new documentary, The Price of Pain, dealing with the presence and overuse of Toradol in professional hockey and the long-term health impacts that has had on players. Cal Quincy was interviewed, Brian Kesler was interviewed, Zdeněk Konopka was interviewed, and these are all guys that to varying degrees went to war in hockey. I've talked at length before about CTE, so you can go back and listen to that episode, and I've never really talked too much about the culture of hockey. I've tried to keep my discussion of sport to a more outside view, bringing in my perspective as somebody who grew up in the hockey world. Keep that to a minimum. But I feel like in this moment, it's something that's not easy to do. Today, I want to talk about why we fight. It wasn't something that was talked a lot about in the documentary. The interview with Zdeněk Konopka deals with that a lot because he was a fighter. And I talked about fighting way, way back. Like, I think it was the second or third episode of this show when I talked about CTE, showing that fighting actually had lower... had a lower impact on head injuries than dangerous body checks and hits to the head. But I still get asked a lot, and my partner, she doesn't like hockey. She doesn't really understand hockey. She tried to watch part of the Western Conference final with me because she wants to get into it. She wants to understand it. She wants to know why I love it so much. And one of the things that she grapples with is the concept of fighting. And it's something that I kind of take for granted that people don't understand and people don't really feel. They have an adverse reaction to when it happens. The way she would jump in and like freak out whenever there was even a minor collision. It's something that's so far out of her purview of what's natural in sport. You know, somebody that never grew up in sport, you know, going back to my conversation of bounded rationality, it was never something that she would ever have to consider because that's not part of the world that she understands. But for me, it's normal. It's natural. I played and still play hockey when I can. Played for a very long time, played a very aggressive body checking, kind of grinder role. And my body paid the price for it. Never had any long-term or serious injuries, but, you know, I had my bumps and bruises, had, you know, dealt with a lot of pain and, you know, waking up the day after a game and just being wrecked. I dealt with that a lot. And, you know, being in minor hockey and being a kid, I didn't have access to Toradol. I think the worst that I was ever given was Tylenol for some of the pain, mostly ibuprofen to get rid of swelling and to relieve pain. But I want to talk a little bit about fighting and why, and look at this history of what brings it into our minds. The first little bit, I'm going to talk mostly about hockey culture, and then I'm going to dive into what other people have said, mostly researchers and journalists and things like that, from an outside perspective. On an inside perspective, fighting is terrifying. Anybody that's been in a hockey fight or just a random street fight can tell you it is exhilarating, but it's also terrifying. I've always said that it's very easy to spot a person that's never been in a fight before with how quickly and how kind of naively they adore violence. There's actually somebody that I know quite well, and somebody else, two of us have joked a lot that they've never been in a real fight because they just adore violence in a very weird fanboy way. Fighting is terrifying because when you enter a fight, everything shuts off. Your awareness shuts off. You are focused on hurting that other person and them hurting you. And often, especially in things like street fights, you don't know where that person's going to stop. In hockey fights, you generally know that as soon as you drop down to your knees or you go down towards the ice, they can wrestle you down and the fight's over. Doesn't really work that way in real life, but it's still terrifying because you know that you need to try and win that fight. You need to try and stay on your feet as long as possible and hurt this other person as much as possible so they fall first. So you know in your mind going into that that you're going to take as much damage as possible to try and keep on your feet. And the longer you stay on your feet, the more it's going to hurt. So you're trying to fight in that fight quickly. That means your inhibitions are going. That means you're throwing everything you have to try and win that fight. And then you know, because you're doing it, that they're going to do it too. So suddenly it's not something technical, it's two people throwing haymakers at each other trying to win. And that's a scary proposition because it just takes one wrong move, one wrong hit, and it's all over. And I'm not just talking about the fight, I'm talking about your career. I'm talking about your life. I'm talking about so much other than the fight itself and the game that you're in. So it's terrifying. But we do it anyways. Why do we do it? If we acknowledge that it hurts, because it does, anybody that's been punched in the face knows it hurts, and it hurts to punch somebody, then why do we keep doing it? Well, when you grow up in the hockey world, it's a necessity. You're brought up to believe that fighting is the ultimate check, the ultimate balance to people being dumb, people taking liberties, people crossing the line and not getting punished for it, or just crossing the line and getting punished for it. Anytime somebody crosses the line, you have to very literally smack them back to the other side. Because that stuff can't stand. The culture of hockey is one built on self-governance and self-policing. We're all taught that you fight to protect your team. You fight to keep the energy up. You fight because somebody did something that they're not supposed to do. So you correct them by force. Sometimes things don't get called. So you gotta make sure. And the only way to make sure is by fighting. That's why we do it. We do it to protect each other. We do it because we feel like it's necessary. We do it because we need to correct improper behavior. And I say we because I'm a part of that culture, and also I've been in a few scraps, nothing major, but you know, I've thrown a punch or two. And I understand the rationale inside. I understand the exhilaration in the room or on the bench after a fight. Even as a kid, you get charged up when you see a fellow 10-year-old go at somebody or a fellow 12-year-old go at somebody. It's not until you get much older that the damage is significant when the bird cages come off and the fist actually hit face. It's exhilarating. It pumps you up. But there's the rationale behind it. And I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's true. I'm not saying it's backed up by anything other than anecdotes passed down and passed between players for generations. I'm not saying that at all. But in that bounded rationality of hockey culture, it makes sense. So what about outside of it? What about in combat sports? What about people watching on TV? It's still very similar. For a long time, people have been studying and trying to figure out why we enjoy violence. All the way back to the gladiators in the Colosseum, there is something about bloodshed and violence that human beings have been unable to evolve past, have been unable to suppress. There is something within us that keeps us engaged when these things happen. So I did a bit of reading, and this is an article on Medium by Angelo Bacco. I'll put it in the show notes. He's writing about MMA combat sports and why do humans like combat sports. To pull from his article, I would argue that fighting is one of the most natural things that humans do. It's in our DNA and what allowed the species to make it to 2016, not 2020. We can speculate that humans probably evolved to fight, so much so that biologists from the University of Utah have published findings theorizing that the human hand evolved to throw punches. Let's take a look at other professional sports. In any other sport, when emotions run high, the competitors are in a high-pressure, high-stakes situation. It does not take much for it to escalate to a fight. This happens on several occasions in Major League Baseball, the NBA, and NFL. It happens every other night in the NHL. I guess the good news is that we're trying to evolve by enjoying sports that serve as proxies to violent confrontations. Perhaps in a few millennia, we will evolve to get rid of this vestigial part of our caveman slash ape DNA. For now, let's just admit the fact that fighting is just so naturally human. And I would firmly agree. It's very strange because I've been able to see a few friends get into combat sports, get into hockey. I have a few friends that some of us didn't grow up playing hockey. Most of us did, but there are a few that did not, and a few that grew up without hockey entirely. A few that just didn't understand hockey. My buddy Evan is a prime example. He grew up playing soccer, and he never really understood why we liked hockey. And then he started watching the Winnipeg Jets, and suddenly it clicked in him. He's like, okay, this is what I like. I like it. And it was strange to see him begin to learn and to start to understand and feel the things that I had felt since I was a child, and to discover this thing about this sport that I had worked at for so long and had been second nature to me for so long. He began to enjoy the sport in a way that I had kind of lost. And see him start to understand the violent aspects of it to a point where he champions it as much as those of us that have played. And some of us that are that have played for a long time have become to be staunchly against it. And maybe it's this arc within, you know, certain segments of the hockey culture, but there is something visceral about it. And I honestly think Bacco hits it on the head. There's something in our DNA. If you think about the start of humanity, when we were still kind of coming into our own as Homo sapiens sapien, and we were working and we were evolving alongside Homo neanderthalis, the whole idea, the way evolution works and the way the animal kingdom works, you know, as Darwin said often, it's survival of the fittest. It's adapting to an environment. Just like our drive to procreate, we have this drive to destroy. Whether it's to destroy, to make and remake, a desire to destroy, to consume, or a desire to destroy, to survive. We have an intrinsic desire within us to destroy. And this has never really left us. This is why violence is, for some, a natural response to a slight. This is why, you know, the concept of downshifting is such a problem, because it's an evolved response to stressors. If you don't know what downshifting is, when you experience anger, your brain, in a response to the stimuli, the anger-generating stimuli, pushes your body into different processes, readying you for a violent confrontation. It speeds up your heart rate, your respiration, your amygdala starts working, and information processing in your brain moves from the prefrontal cortex, which handles rational thought, and slides back towards your, you know, the rear part of your brain, kind of in the middle section where your amygdala is, or your hippocampus are. It's pushing your brain back, and it's pushing forward with, and it's reserving its functioning for the fight or flight response, to the threat evaluation response. And that's why when people are angry and furious, they act out in irrational ways, and they do not respond well to rational thought and trying to be calmed down by rational thinking. If you've ever seen somebody who's absolutely furious, reasoning with them is nearly impossible. You almost kind of just have to hope that you can restrain them. That's because their brain is downshifted. And this is a response. This is not a learned response. This is not something that, you know, a Pavlovian response to stimuli that somebody has learned throughout their lives. It is something that happens with toddlers. It's something that happens with adults. It's something that happens with elderly people. I still remember a fight between two elderly Grey Cup champions on stage, because that animosity had stayed for so long within them. You know, I think people who've never been in combat like that, been in a situation like that, don't really understand. And that's not me grandstanding. That's not me saying that their ideas about violence are wrong. I think they are more right than us who have been in those confrontations before. I'm not trying to ascribe any moral value to violence or fighting or allowing yourself to be angry and get into that state. It's just, as I said, it's bounded rationality. It's something, it's an experience that others don't have, that they can't understand. And it requires us to have those conversations and talk about those things so they can understand and we can understand each other. So we have this evolved response, and what do we do about it? Well, I think one of the best things we've done about it is create combat sports and create, you know, violent video games and violent media, because, and this is going to sound very weird, and I need to make this point so I can get to my point, getting rid of violence, or having violence and violent tendencies contained in an area where they can be controlled through rules, regulations, and the mitigation of harm, I think is the best way for continuing with these violent tendencies in human beings. So it sounds like I'm condoning violence, which I'm really not. I don't think violence is often the answer to anything. I don't think violence has been the answer since probably the Second World War. But having, you know, combat sports and violent video games allows us to sate or to express these violent tendencies in a way that can be controlled and harm can be mitigated. A long time ago, again, I had an episode on violent video games and the violence people think they cause. It was in the wake of another mass shooting, and I talked about priming and the idea that by viewing violent media and playing violent video games, that it primes people and it desensitizes people to violence, so they're more likely to be violent. But what we find in truth is the opposite. While there is among children, there is a tendency to be violent through that priming. The priming, as the name implies, primes behavior for expression, but that wears off very quickly. And, you know, after a half hour, the reactions are gone. The priming has worn off. As somebody who grew up playing violent video games and playing a violent sport, I think I've grown up to be a very non-violent person. And that's my personal experience, and that's an anecdote, which cannot be taken as gospel and as law, but I think there are a lot of people out there that would agree with me. I think combat sports are important. I think hockey fighting is important. I think sport in general is important because it's a way for us to express a more animalistic or a more primal aspect of ourselves. This energy expression, this violence, this... running around, hitting things, kicking things, expending all this energy, and then the people that watch it. It's to sate it. Why a lot of, discussion around the Colosseum is it allowed people to see violence and experience violence so they knew what violence actually looked like. I think a problem in our modern society is that people grow up without knowing what violence actually looks like. If I can go the rest of my life with never getting in another fight, I will. Do I want to protect my children from it? Yeah, I totally do. But I think something's been lost. To not be able to shy away or think it is improper to see the consequences of violence. You know, the reason we watch documentaries, the reason people watch combat sports, we see something we don't see every day. I think in 2020, we're learning that a lot of us, for generations, were brought up a little bit isolated and a little bit shielded from the harms of the world. And it's coming back to haunt us. We are afraid to confront things because we're afraid of conflict. We're afraid of violence when that fear of conflict and that fear to confront is in fact opening the door for violence. We're afraid to be challenged. We're afraid of difference. We're afraid of, you know, that quiet kid in the corner. We're afraid of that person praying at a different church. We're afraid of that person who votes in a different party. We're afraid of a person that has a different political view. And that is opening the door for a lot of issues. Because there are people out there that need to be challenged, just not in a violent way. And yes, there are sometimes people that need to be challenged with violence. That I'm not trying to shy away from that fact. But I think as a human species, we're missing something here. We're hiding behind keyboards. And we're hiding behind fancy notions of fairness and pacifism, when sometimes we need to meet in the middle. that video game violence episode, I talked about confronting and discussing, bringing in the people, the isolated individuals who are most likely to become radicalized and commit violence. If we can confront, not in a violent way, but go to them, challenge them, talk to them, have a conversation, make them feel like they're a part of society, then we can avoid that. I think combat sports and violent video games and violent films are a great release valve, because it allows us, as was expressed in the article, to release that pressure. It's in our DNA. We've evolved to fight. So maybe once in a while, we should just let ourselves fight. And that will just about do it for this episode. Thank you very, very much for listening. This has been Let's Talk About It. I've been Jason. You've been the audience. If you're listening live on 101.5 UMFM, thank you very much for tuning in. You've got some music coming up next here on this wonderful Tuesday afternoon. I guess it's afternoon now. And if you're listening on Spotify, thank you very, very much for your download. I very much appreciate it. So thank you once again. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. And have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful week.